with satisfaction, Morg scattered salt on the wet ink of the proclamations that Gar would shortly sign, then sat back in his chair. Beyond the closed door of Geralt's private library, he could hear voices as the Lord's household bustled. At last his plans were fruiting, and with inconvenient Asher soon to be dead, the cripple off the throne, and himself as king and free to tamper as he willed, Baal's cursed wall would quickly be a memory. Knowing how close he'd come to failure, fury stirred. First Derm's injuries, then the unexpected interference of that Olcan filth. A tremor of hatred, of livid frustration, shook his fine-knit limbs. He was so sick of this place. Sick of this exile behind Baal's wall, of being cut off from his vast reservoir of power, trammelled and confined in these prisons of meat, vulnerable to mere accident, forced to wait and plot and connive and scheme, instead of reaching out his will and taking what he wanted the instant that he wanted it. To be thwarted by an Olcan? It was enough to make him vomit. He wanted to kill them all, slaughter every last Olcan, and yes, the Dorinan too, rid this pretty kingdom of its cattle and renegades, cleanse the land with blood and fire. But no. As an infinite intellect trapped in finite flesh, he dared not risk it. Alarm and alert the kingdom's magicians, and united they might defeat him. Caution was the key. The moment Baal's wall was destroyed, he could abandon this body and reunite with his larger, immortal self. But until then, he had to be careful. Until then, Morg could still die. A whisper from his deeply prisoned host. Yes, yes, die! He smiled. Fool Conroyd, who'd fancied himself a mage to be reckoned with, who only now began to understand the meaning of ambition, of mastery, of power. The parchments dry now, he rolled them, secured them with the ribbon from the desk drawer, and tucked them under his arm. Fat Willa was waiting patiently on a bench outside the library door. "My lord," he cried, lumbering to his feet. "What now?" A useful little toad, this. Disappointed, poisonous men were always useful. "Return to the tower. Inform that black streak of misery, Darren, that I wish him to announce an emergency session of the General Council for 2 o'clock this afternoon." Willa bowed.
"Yes, my lord."
Next, Morg ordered Geralt's carriage and directed it to the city chapel, where he found Wittering Holes in the midst of leading a morning service.
"Conroyd!"
the Baal-sodden cleric exclaimed, once the caterwauling was over and the congregation had emptied from its seats.
"You look quite perturbed. Is something the matter?"
Morg arranged Geralt's austerely beautiful face into lines of tragedy and woe.
"Alas, dear Ephraim, I'm afraid it is. Can we talk? Privately?"
"Of course. Come, we can speak in my office."
Smiling quietly, Morg followed him out of the chapel. As they passed yet another portrait of his dearly beloved dead whore, he blew her a kiss. When Asher roused from his stupor, he found himself still on the floor of his cell in the guardhouse, unbound, and Pellin Oryk sitting in a chair outside it reading reports. The pain Geralt had inflicted was gone, but the memory of it dried his mouth and threatened to start him shaking all over again. Unsteadily, he sat up, leaned against the nearest bars.
"I want to see Gar," he croaked. "I got a right."
Oryk looked at him. Nobody would ever describe the captain as forthcoming, but they'd fallen into the habit of easy, joking conversation in the last long weeks. He'd been halfway to thinking the man might become a friend. Now, though, the warm flicker of appreciation in Oryk's pale eyes was extinguished, and his face was set like stone.
Don't speak to me of rights, Asher. Not after what you've done. And don't go trying to change your tune now either. You confessed to Lord Geralt and then to me. You're condemned out of your own mouth.
He'd confessed to Auric? He didn't remember that. Pain had stolen his last hour or so.
I only did what Gar asked me to do.
Auric grimaced.
So you say. I'm a liar now, am I? Asher, I'm afraid to think what you are,
said Auric, and stood, turning away. He wrapped his fingers round the cell bars and hauled himself to his feet.
Geralt ain't told you, has he?
Reluctantly, Auric turned back.
Told me what?
He asked at last, grudging.
Gar's lost his magic.
Another silence, longer this time. Then Auric shook his head.
That's impossible.
No,
it's true.
Then you stole it,
Auric retorted,
though Barrow alone knows how.
Stole it? Do I look brainsick to you? You look like a traitor.
It was no good. He couldn't stand up any longer. Stifling a groan, he slid back to the floor.
Well, I ain't. You broke Barrel's first law! And Geralt broke the second! He hurt me with magic, Pellin. Do you care about that law? Or doesn't hurting me count?
For the first time, a shimmer of uncertainty crossed Auric's obdurate face.
I have no bias in the law, Asher, he said stiffly. I agree Lord Geralt was misguided, but he was also sore provoked.
And so was I bloody provoked, he shouted. Do you think I did this willingly? Gar begged me, Auric. You got any idea what that's like? Being begged by a king. He was desperate to keep Lur out of Geralt's hands, and I was stupid enough to let him convince me. Ask him, Pellin. He'll tell you I ain't lying. I swear.
Auric ran a hand over his face, listening, but not convinced.
You didn't steal His Majesty's magic?
No.
Then where did it come from?
Auric whispered. He looked torn between fear and fury.
Ulkan had taught from the cradle. We don't have magic. So where did yours come from, if not the king?
I don't know, and I don't care. All I know is Gar swore to protect me if the truth came out. Well, Pellin, it's out. And instead of acting like the city's captain and asking the king yourself whether or not I'm telling the truth, you're running about like Conroy Geralt's lapdog, taking his word unchallenged. A man who tortures with magic. A man who's coveted this kingdom's crown for the best part of his life. Who'd do just about anything, I reckon, to snatch it off Gar's head and put it on his own.
Auric glared, seething.
I am no man's lapdog!
Muscles screaming, Asher forced himself onto his knees, hanging on to the bars, harshly breathing. He looked Pellin Auric full in the face.
Prove it.
Auric stayed silent as a thousand thoughts rolled behind the glassy surface of his eyes. Slowly, the outright rejection in his face faded to wary suspicion.
Why should I? You're the one in prison, not me. Today,
Asher agreed, feeling ill.
But if you let this injustice stand without raising a finger against it, there won't be a single Ulkan safe in all of Lur. Don't you see, Pellin? If Geralt dares hurt me with magic, who of us won't he touch?
Still suspicious, Auric tapped a knuckle to his lips.
You must see, Asher. What you claim strains all bounds of credibility.
It was a struggle, but he kept his voice steady. He was so close to begging, and he'd never begged for anything in his life. I can't help that. What I did was for Gar and the kingdom. I swear it. Pellin, you know me. You know me. I ain't a traitor. Like the first hint of sunlight on snow, Oryk's expression softened. Before today, I confess I'd have laughed to hear you called one. Asher swallowed. And now it's changed. But without your help, I'll never prove it. Lord Geralt has laid it strict upon me I'm to keep this coil a secret, said Oryk, frowning. I'm not to step foot outside the guardhouse till he returns. He'd never known hope could hurt so much. Then send Gar a message, private and sealed. If you ask him, he'll come. He'll fix this. I know it. He promised. Oryk turned away from the cell. With his hand on the outer door's latch, he said, not looking back, I promise nothing. But you'll try. The longest moment of silence he'd ever lived through. A fractional dip of Pellin Oryk's head. White knuckles on the door latch. Yes, Asher. I'll try. When Conroy Geralt returned to the tower and was shown into Gar's library, he wasn't alone. Holes stood at his shoulder. One look at him and Gar knew Conroy had told all. Eyes grim, mouth pressed thin and unforgiving, there was little of the kindly welcoming cleric about the royal spiritual adviser now. Instead, he looked like a man made of iron, against which all gentle things must shatter. Pinned to his chair by Holes's hard, heavy gaze, Gar felt himself diminish, weaken, falter. In the time between his rude awakening and this moment, he'd managed to gather his scattered wit, smother dismay and bolster courage. Let Conroy bluster and bully as he liked, he was not king. His threats were the rantings of a man unhinged by thwarted ambition, nothing more. No Dornan of conscience would stand by and let him slaughter innocent Olkin. No cleric who followed Baal's merciful teachings would countenance such uncivil discord. Holes would never side with Conroy. Holes would understand that what his king had done was done for the good of all. Or so he told himself as he bathed and dressed and recovered his balance. But now Holes was here before him, with all his thoughts clear in his face.
Your Majesty, he said, I scarcely know where to begin.
Gar stood. There must yet be hope. Holes, Ephraim, I thought you of all men would understand.
Understand what?
Said the cleric, a whip snap in his voice.
That you placed personal ambition above a sacred oath? That you suborned blasphemy in the pursuit of worldly power? That you conspired to pervert the course of law and justice of Baal's holy word, which you were sworn to uphold? No, sir, I do not understand. I will never understand. And I praise Baal your father did not live to see the day his son committed such sins against the kingdom in whose sweet service he spent his life.
How can truth be blasphemous? He demanded. Holes, don't you understand? We've been living a lie, all of us. The Olkin are possessed of magic. Learning this, how can we in good conscience...
The question of Olkin magic is irrelevant, said Holes. The only arbiter of conscience is Blessed Baal and her laws, and they are crystal clear on the matter. Magic is reserved for the Dornan, custodians of Baal's kingdom. As king, you but hold this land in trust, a trust you have grievously betrayed.
Gar looked from Holes to Conroy Geralt. Until now, he'd never thought hate could be a thing you tasted, like wine gone sour in the jug. Congratulations, Conroy. Somehow you've managed to convert a good man to your deceitful cause. Conroyd smiled. The only deceit was yours. Now hold your tongue. All we require from you is a signature on these proclamations. Your opinions have ceased to carry weight in this kingdom. Whilst yours have assumed all the heaviness of a crown, in due course. The bastard was unspeakably smug. Feeling sick, his ill-advised breakfast churning in his belly, Gar held out his hand to receive the first roll of parchment, untied the ribbon encircling it, read its contents. He looked up. I can't sign this. Holes exchanged glances with Conroyd.
Why not?
Because it's a lie, he said, and tossed the parchment aside. Asher didn't steal my magic. There was no Ulkan conspiracy to dislodge me from the throne or usurp Doranan authority in the kingdom. Asher did what he did because I asked him to, and for no other reason. Isn't it enough that you want me to kill him? Must I kill his memory also, and all the good he did as well? If you do not sign it, you leave open the possibility that some misguided Ulkan fool might question the validity of his condemnation, said Conroyd. He is popular, this monster you created. To uncreate him, you must paint him blacker than he's painted himself, and so ensure he is remembered not with love, but with loathing. His destruction must stand as a beacon till the end of time, a warning to any Ulkan who would dare disturb the quietude of this kingdom. As well talk to a wall as to Conroyd Geralt. He looked to Holes. Can't you see this is wrong? How can you support it? Ask me to support it. I thought you loved me.
I loved a boy who loved his family, said Holes, unmoved. I loved a man who loved this kingdom, who bore misfortune with fortitude and spent his life in service to others. I don't know the man I see before me today, and how can I love a man I do not know?
Gar felt his legs give way, fold him once more into his chair. Suddenly it was hard to breathe. I can't do this.
You must, said Holes. Asher is a canker, poised to kill a kingdom. He must be cut from its heart before his poison spreads. If you do not see it, there is as little hope for you as there is for him.
He'd never imagined soft-spoken Holes could sound so harsh. But he is innocent, blameless.
Hardly innocent, said Conroyd. By your own admission, he broke the law.
Again he looked to Holes. Do you know what Conroyd threatened to make me agree to this perfidy? Did he tell you what he'd swore he'd do if I refused to conspire with him in Asher's murder? Holes was shaking his head.
Lawful execution is no murder.
He said he'd despoil my family's legacy.
You've done that yourself.
He said he'd slaughter thousands of guiltless Ulkan.
If it's discovered there are other Ulkan, other traitors, with pretensions to a power denied them by Baal herself, then certainly they will die, Holes replied. But that is hardly slaughter.
Conroyd smiled.
Accept it, boy. Your reign is over. You threw power away when you yoked yourself to Asher of Resthaven. Sign his warrant of execution, and this your intent to abdicate, and then get down on your knees and praise Baal that for the sake of this kingdom's peace, you're to be spared a more rigorous accounting of your actions.
Gar stared at the second roll of parchment, and for one last mad moment considered defying them. Considered spitting in Conroyd's handsome, hateful face and trusting himself and Asher to Baal's mercy. To the love of his kingdom's people, both Doranan and Ulkan. To their forgiveness of his frailty, his failure as a magician, his desperation as a king. somehow, Conroy read his mind.
They might forgive you, boy. They will never forgive Asher. He is dead already. He was dead the moment you convinced him to defy Baal's first law. And if you're honest, if you're even capable of honesty, you know I speak the truth.
He felt a peculiar inner breaking then, as though his bones were made of glass and Conroy's words were hammers striking. He nodded. Yes, I know. There was pen and ink in the desk drawer. He fetched them and signed the proclamations, wrote carefully with a steady hand, using all his names and titles. Gar Anton Bartholomew Dennison Torvig, Scion House Torvig, Defender House Torvig, Weather Worker of Lur, Traitor, Betrayer, and Breaker of Oaths.
Don't forget your personal seal, prompted Conroy. The finishing touch, so to speak.
A stick of sealing wax lay in another drawer. Conroy melted it for him with a word, smiling just a little. He pressed his signet ring into each blood-red pool and completed his act of treachery. Watching, it was as though a stranger's hand did the deed. Conroy took the signed proclamations and rolled them swiftly.
As for the rest...
Rest, he said dully. What rest?
My elevation to the throne. I've called an emergency general council meeting at which you'll announce your abdication and withdrawal from public life. You'll declare me your lawful heir, Lur's new king and weather worker. Then you'll return to this tower and not set foot beyond its grounds until such time as I give you permission.
This was a dream. It had to be. Today? You want me to abdicate today? Conroy was pulling on gold-stitched gloves.
Why postpone the inevitable? Without magic, you cannot be king, and Lur needs its weather worker. Baal only knows what damage was done by that creature you let meddle with the wall.
Asher did no damage, Conroy sneered.
How would you know? You're a magicless cripple.
He flinched, felt corrosive self-hatred like acid. His father would never so meekly submit. He had to keep fighting. He made himself stand. For all you know, there might be a cure for me, Conroy. I demand consultation with Potha Nix. I demand...
Nothing, said Conroy. Not now, not ever. And besides, there is no cure. Now, as to the dispersal of your household.
Dispersal? What do you... Conroy ignored him.
In keeping with your newly reduced role in the kingdom, and to minimize your burden on the royal purse, the majority of your staff will be reassigned. Only Darren will remain to take care of your modest daily needs. I hope he can cook. And clean.
One man? Gar said incredulous. To care for all this tower? Darren is elderly and recently infirm. You can't expect him to...
But I can, said Conroy, smiling. I do. Perhaps you could in some small way shift for yourself. Baal knows you'll have the time.
Conroy?
Holes murmured disapprovingly, standing to one side. Doing nothing to stop this. Unheeding, Conroy continued.
Your stables, of course, will be emptied. Horses and equipment sold off.
Fresh pain stabbed. Sold? Balladair? No, he was a gift from my father. You have no right to...
Your expenses must be defrayed somehow. And given you'll not be riding anywhere in the near future, what need have you of horses? The animal will be sold along with all the rest.
Conroy stepped closer, pale eyes glittering.
You dare to complain? Don't. Mercy has its limits. You are free on sufferance, boy.
Free? He said, and laughed. I'm your prisoner. Holes cleared his throat heavily.
If this tower has become your cell, then it's a cell of your own making.
And as cells go, it's not without comfort, Conroyd added. I'm sure your unfortunate Olkin would be pleased to change places.
Gar felt his belly spasm.
He's not to be touched, Conroyd. You've got your wish. He's in prison and condemned to die. That should be enough, even for you.
When Conroyd stayed silent, he turned to Holes.
Balsman, I'm begging you. Restrain Lord Geralt. If not for me, then for the love you bore my father.
Holes's face twisted.
Your purse is empty of that coin, sir.
Your purse is empty of all coin, said Conroyd. Save the quicks I let fall in your path. Remember that. Remember also the Olkin stand hostage to your good behavior and silent tongue. If word of Asher's exploits leaves this room, there will be consequences.
I see, said Gar, when he could trust himself to speak. I disobey, and someone else suffers? Conroyd's smile was pure poison.
Exactly. Now, I suggest you spend the next while penning a short, crowd-pleasing speech for our esteemed General Council. As for the meeting, I'll return to collect you for it later this afternoon. Don't keep me waiting.
With an effort, he bit back a response. Instead, looked to Holes. About Derm.
I go now to the palace infirmary, the Balsman said. He shall be afforded all rights and respect. None of this mess is of his making.
Was that true? He wished he knew. Wished desperately that he'd had more time to quiz the dying Master Magician, to learn more of Baal's diary and what use Derm had made of it, if any, and how it was their only hope. He had to find the thing. If there was an escape from this nightmare, perhaps he'd find it there.
Thank you, Holes, he said stiffly. For myself and my father.
He looked again at Conroyd.
You will need to choose his successor.
Conroyd shrugged.
Certainly. At some point.
No. Now. The law is quite clear. You must...
Law? Conroyd laughed. You sit there and lecture me on law? Hold your tongue, brat. Remember your new position in the kingdom.
He stood, feeling most peculiar. Disconnected and likely to float right out of his body.
I shall. Are we done?
For now.
Then get out.
Conroyd's golden eyebrows lifted.
Get out. Your Majesty.
He opened his mouth to say something catastrophic, but was stopped by Darren's flustered entrance.
Forgive me, Your Majesty, but an urgent message has come from the city guardhouse. It's from Captain Auric. The runner is waiting your reply.
Conroyd held out his hand.
Give it here.
Darren hesitated.
My lord, it is addressed to the king.
Give it here!
Gar nodded as, uncertain and unhappy, Darren glanced at him. The message was handed over. Conroyd broke the seal, read the note, refolded it, and slipped it into his pocket.
Tell the runner to inform Captain Auric. I shall arrive at the guardhouse in due course.
Darren took a step towards him.
Sir?
Gar stared at the floor. Do as Lord Geralt says, Darren.
Yes, sir,
said Darren, and withdrew. What did it say? He asked. Conroyd shook his head.
Nothing that concerns you any longer.
Geralt and Holes departed, taking the signed proclamations with them. Aimless, emptied of thought and feeling, Gar wandered around the room like a boat set adrift on a lowering tide. Darren returned and hovered in the open doorway.
Your Majesty? Leave me be.
Darren took a step forward.
Sir, Lord Geralt is issuing orders. He says...
I know what he says, he whispered, and ran gentle fingers along a shelf line of books. Lord Geralt is a voluble man. Darren's lined face was a picture of confusion and dismay.
Sir, he says you're no longer the king.
He's right. I've had a busy morning, Darren, though you might not think so to look at me.
Your Majesty.
Don't call me that!
A shocked silence. Darren crept a little closer.
Sir?
Do you know what I've done since opening my eyes? It was Darren's turn to whisper.
No, sir.
Then I'll tell you. I've eaten breakfast, renounced the throne and murdered my friend. And look, it's not even midday. Quick, Darren, find me a baby and I'll strangle it before lunch.
Sir!
It came as a shock to realize he was crying. Hot tears falling from cold eyes, springing from a cold and killing heart.
Just get out, would you? He shouted. Get out of here, old man! Old fool! Get out and leave me alone!
Darren fled. It felt like years had passed, but finally Auric returned. When the cell's outer door opened again, Asher grunted to his feet and stepped to his cage's locked door.
Pellin! He said eagerly, craning to see past the captain's shoulder. Did you fetch him? Is he coming? Is it all sorted out? What's that scroll you got there? Is it my pardon?
Pellin gave him a look so cold, so hard, it was like being struck in the face with a bar of iron.
Be silent.
He felt his heart jolt.
Pellin? What is it? What's...
And then he stopped, because entering the outer cell was Conroy Geralt. He carried a slender poker, tapping it against one boot as he walked. At his heels, Willa, bloated and shining with triumph. And behind him came two guards, manacles dangling from their fists, Ox Bunder and Treve Lallard, casual darts and drinking mates down at the Goose. He felt the blood drain from his face, leaving him dizzy and sick, and stepped unsteadily backwards.
Pellin, what's going on?
Ignoring him, Auric looked at Geralt. Geralt nodded. Auric unrolled the scroll and began to read. Insofar as he has been apprehended in the midst of a blasphemous and criminal act, with witness unimpeachable, and insofar as this act is named the breaking of Barl's first law, I, King Gar the First, weather worker of Lur, hereby condemn Asher of Resthaven to lawful death. Numbly disbelieving, he let the words wash over him like so much salty water. Suspicion of baleful influence upon his king. Instigation of Alcan conspiracy to usurp the throne. Furthermore, let it be known that said criminal Asher of Resthaven has acted in a fashion suggested of further miscreancy, authorized to question by whatever means necessary. Auric stopped reading. Confused, Asher stared.
No, that ain't right. Gar wouldn't... That ain't right! It's a forgery! Geralt!
Auric stepped forward and flattened the parchment against the cell bars.
It is no forgery!
His voice was harsh with rage and pain.
Or don't you recognize the signature? The seal?
They were Gar's.
So what?
Asher said, starting to shake. That don't prove nought. Gar wouldn't abandon me like this, make up that pack of lies about conspiracies and usurping. This is Geralt's bloody bastardry. Gar would never...
That's enough, Asher!
Oryk shouted, snatching back the proclamation. His Majesty has renounced you. It's over. Conroy Geralt cleared his throat.
Well, not quite, Captain. Before death comes discomfort. Unless, of course, Asher would like to reveal here and now the names of those who helped him.
Nobody helped me, he said. There was nought to help with. There ain't no conspiracy.
The King says there is, said Conroy Geralt, and that's good enough for me. Guards?
The cell door was unlocked. Bunder and Lallard entered, shackled him with the manacles, fixed the chains to the sides of the cell, and stretched him out like a scarecrow in a field.
Excellent, said Geralt. Now, leave us.
What about a trial?
Demanded Asher, as the outer door banged shut. Already his shoulders were burning. He saw Willa step closer to the cage, eyes alight with eagerness.
Don't I get a trial? Timmins Spake got a trial.
You're not Timmins Spake, said Geralt. The King himself has corroborated your confession and condemned you out of hand.
He wouldn't. He promised.
Geralt ignored him, instead turned to Oryk.
Captain, it's likely this traitor's co-conspirators will be found amongst his intimate acquaintances. Seek them out and arrest them quietly before they have a chance to flee justice.
Daphne.
Asher choked back a cry of protest.
No.
Oh, to be able to warn her. There'd be a way with magic, if only he knew what it was. Bloody magic. It had to be good for more than causing trouble. Oryk was nodding. Yes, my lord.
Willa?
My lord?
Assist Captain Oryk. You'll know best who to look for and where they can be found.
Willa's disappointment was almost comical.
My lord, I wanted to stay, to assist you in...
Willa!
Cringing, the slug retreated.
Yes, my lord. Of course, my lord.
And Willa, Captain, one last thing.
With a snap of his fingers and a softly spoken word, Geralt froze Oryk and the slug where they stood.
Attend. Asher was apprehended attempting magic, not performing it. There is no power in him. This is what you know and will remember.
That's a lie, said Asher.
The blankness in Pelin Oryk's face made him feel sick. It was as though the man's soul had been wiped away. Willa's too, if the little turd possessed one.
I can do magic. I'd bloody kill you with it if I could.
The look in Geralt's eyes was frightening.
You couldn't. But in the short time remaining to you, dare hint to anyone that you could try, and I'll kill them. Their families too. Is that clear?
Nauseous, believing him absolutely, Asher nodded. Aye.
Good.
With another snap of his fingers, Geralt released his frozen victims.
Carry out your orders, then. And see to it I am not disturbed hereafter, Captain.
Oryk bowed. Seemingly he'd taken no harm from whatever Geralt had done. My lord. Without a backward glance, he left the cell, a subdued Willa at his heels. Asher watched Geralt pass his hand before the outer cell door, saw the air shiver blackly, felt a brief pressure against his chest. Geralt turned, smiled, approached.
Alone at last.
Asher felt his lungs hitch.
Gar never signed that proclamation.
Lounging in the open cell door, Geralt raised his eyebrows.
Of course he did.
No, you faked it. You... Asher!
Geralt's smile twisted into something more complicated.
He signed it.
Asher believed him. For a moment, he couldn't breathe at all. Rage, grief, terror. His heart was barely beating.
You know I did this on my own, he protested. You know there ain't a conspiracy. You were inside my head. You know everything.
Geralt raised the poker and eyed its slender strength.
True.
Then why?
Because I want to. Because your simple axe death will not satisfy. You interfered, little Olkin, and I brook no interference. So I'm going to punish you, the good old-fashioned way.
There was sweat rolling down his back, his face. Asher blinked the stinging salt water from his eyes. There was something different about Conroy Geralt. He'd always been a smug bastard, impatient, contemptuous, superior, utterly unlikable. But now he was something else, something more. It rolled off him in thick, stinking waves, blood-curdling, stomach-churning. Evil. Gar was right about you, he whispered. Born too. You're bad. Rotten bad all the way through. You can't hide it anymore. And when your Doran and friends see the truth of you, they'll not let you keep your stolen crown. This kingdom'll tear apart, Geralt. It'll die, and you'll have killed it. Is that what you want?
Yes.
Now save your breath, Geralt advised him kindly. You'll need it for screaming. And when you're done with screaming, after I've reduced your throat to a roar in bloody wasteland, Auric and his men will take you to the center of the city square, where you'll be chained in a cage for all the world to see and spit upon. And at midnight on Baal's day next, a suitably dramatic moment, you'll agree, before as large a crowd as be contrived, your head will be hacked from your shoulders. Your body will be fed to the swine. The swine shall be butchered and fed to the dogs, and the dogs will be shot dead with arrows. Languid and unexcited, Geralt strolled into the cell, spoke a single knife-edged word. The poker's brass tip caught fire. In his pale ice eyes, pleasure flickered, and something else. Something dark and dangerous and soaked in blood. He smiled, touched. Asher's world disappeared in a scarlet sheet of flame. Chapter 23. With a small self-satisfied sigh, Darren covered his Highness's lunch tray with a damask napkin. The prince's silence since Lord Geralt's abrupt departure and his own unkind ejection from the library had been absolute and ominous. Luncheon gave him the excuse he needed to make sure everything was all right. Well, as all right as it could be, given recent appalling developments. With a last look about the kitchen, he picked up the tray and headed for the door. It was perhaps a good thing Mistress Hemshaw had been dismissed. If she could see the place now, after his distracted efforts at cooking, she'd have gone into strong hysterics. He was tempted to go into strong hysterics himself. How empty the tower felt with all its people forcibly removed. Aching with sorrow and regrets, he climbed stair by silent stair up to Gar's suite of apartments. Passing by Asher's floor, he shuddered, closed his mind to a calamity of images, and kept on climbing. The prince was still in his library, sitting in the armchair he'd shifted to face the uncurtained window.
I've brought you some luncheon, sir, Darren said, standing just inside the doorway.
I'm not hungry.
Hungry or not, you should eat, he replied, forcing his voice to a cheerful chiding. Hesitantly, he entered the room. If you fall ill, it'll be Potha Nix's potion you'll be swallowing, and while my cooking isn't perfect, I can promise you it does taste better than that.
Leave it on the desk, then, said Gar. His voice sounded dull, lackluster. His left hand was just visible, dangling over the arm of the chair. It looked dead.
Darren frowned and shook his head, even though the prince couldn't see him. Now, sir, you don't want it to get cold.
I said leave it on the desk! Gar shouted, and flung himself out of the chair.
A sapphire-studded dagger dangled from the fingers of his right hand, and his eyes were frightening.
Darren stepped back, his grip on the lunch tray tight enough to hurt.
Sir, the weapon isn't necessary. I assure you the chicken is quite deceased. I roasted it myself.
With a roar of rage, Gar threw the dagger across the room. It struck the door jamb and stuck there, quivering.
I care not for your chicken, old man. Take it away, and if you can't do as I tell you, don't come here again.
He would not look at the dagger. Instead, he put down the tray on the nearest flat surface and approached his prince.
Enough, sir,
he said, hands raised, palm out like a man reasoning with madness.
You're going to hurt yourself.
Gar laughed.
Hurt myself? You old fool, I never hurt myself. Only other people. My parents, my sister, Derm. Yes, he's dead now too.
He groaned and dropped slowly to the floor.
Asher.
Darren knelt beside him, deaf to complaining muscles and creaking bones.
You're talking nonsense. You didn't cause the accident that killed your family and our poor master magician, Baal, rest him.
How can I be certain? Demanded Gar. I don't remember what happened. It might have been me, Darren. It might have been my damned capricious magic. No physical agency for the accident was ever discovered, was it? And clearly my power was never right. It was flawed, as I am flawed. If I wasn't, I'd still possess it. I'd still be the weather worker and Asher would. Baal's tits, Darren. I swore I'd protect him. I swore he'd be safe, and instead I signed his death warrant. I betrayed the only friend I've ever known. A man who saved my life. Who tried to save my kingdom when I couldn't. I am pathetic. Disgusting. I wonder how you can bear to be in the same room with me.
Distressed by his distress and closing his ears to the blasphemy, he seized Gar's hand and held on tight.
Don't say such things, sir.
Why not? They're true.
So what if Conroy threatened me? I should have found a way to defeat him. To save Asher.
He stared. Gar's hand felt so cold. He felt so cold.
Lord Geralt threatened you? How? Why?
Gar pulled his hand free and let himself sag against the armchair. It doesn't matter. What matters is I've given our kingdom to that man. Handed it over without a fight. My father would be so disappointed.
No, sir! No! He said fiercely. That's not true. Your father loved you and was proud of you every day of his life. He's proud now, I'm certain of it, as I am proud. And nor is it true that Asher is your only friend. I am your friend, sir, and will remain so till the day I die.
Gar looked at him, tried to smile, and miserably failed.
Then in the name of all that's merciful, Terran, he whispered, leave me alone.
He sighed, clambered to his feet, frowning.
If I do, sir, will you promise me first that you'll eat?
I could, said Gar, but my promises are a figment, Darren.
Don't you know that yet? I shed promises the way a dog sheds fleas.
And that's not true either.
And now Gar stood, only to slump on the arm of his chair, as though standing were a task beyond his strength.
Isn't it?
Ask Asher. He sniffed.
I don't consort with criminals.
He's not a criminal. He's a sacrifice.
But he's arrested. Why would he be arrested if he's not a...
Darren... Gar hesitated, examined the carpet.
If I tell you what's happened, why I'm deposed and the tower emptied, Asher condemned.
Oh, I wish you would, sir. I can't make head or tail of anything.
Now the prince looked up. His face was solemn, his gaze intent.
You can never repeat it. Lives will depend on your silence, not just yours and mine, but those of every Olkin in the kingdom. Do you understand?
Darren straightened, let a little of his affronted pride show.
I have spent the best part of my life in royal service, sir. I think I know the meaning of discretion.
Faint colour washed into Gar's pale cheeks.
Of course you do. Forgive me.
Certainly. Now please, sir, tell me.
By the time the prince finished, Darren knew the world he'd lived in was gone forever, or perhaps had never existed. He groped his way to the library's other chair and sat down.
Baal have mercy, he whispered. This is all my fault.
The prince stared.
Your fault?
Hot with shame, he couldn't look at Gar. Stared instead at his manicured fingernails and longed hopelessly to be anywhere else in Lur, confessing anything but this.
You see, I always encouraged Willer in his antipathy towards Asher, allowed him to know the depths of my own disliking. For a whole year, longer, we carped and criticized and complained of his existence to each other. And then, after you asked Asher and me to work together for the good of the kingdom, I failed to take Willer into my confidence or explain my change in attitude. Instead, I reproved him for bad behavior. When you became king, I think Willer was expecting some kind of promotion. But it didn't come. And then I was so busy. Oh, sir, Willer never would have turned to Lord Geralt. Never would have spied for him if I'd handled the matter with greater tact.
After a long silence, Gar sighed.
You don't know that.
I don't know that. And it hardly matters now. If it's any consolation, Darren, I don't blame you. I think Willer and Asher would have been enemies regardless. They're cut from different cloths.
Subdued, Darren folded his hands in his lap. You're very generous, sir.
He cleared his throat.
Is there nothing you can do for Asher?
No, said Gar tiredly. I wish there was. I'd die in his place if Geralt would let me. But the kingdom comes first, and your people must be protected. If Willer hadn't been set to spy on him, if our mad plan hadn't been discovered, we might have weathered this storm, found a way to calmer waters, or a cure for my affliction. But it's too late now. I can't save Asher. I can't even save myself.
Darren shook his head. It's beyond all comprehension, sir, that an Olkin could do such things.
I know, said Gar. And now you must forget what I've told you. I should have held my tongue, not burdened you with the truth. It's just... His voice cracked. I don't want him to die without another person knowing the good he tried to do. Knowing that no matter what is said of him once he's gone, he was never a traitor. Darren moistened dry lips. Yes, sir. I understand. It's been a shock, I won't deny that. But I'm glad you confided in me. Are you? The prince shook his head. Let's hope that doesn't change. It won't, he promised. Sir, this is all indeed a tragedy, but nothing can be gained or changed by making yourself ill. Please, won't you eat? Gar sighed. I'll try, but I make no guarantees, Darren. I've a speech to write, and the thought of it makes me wretch. Leave me be, and I'll do my best with your damned chicken. Yes, sir, he said, his heart all in pieces, and left the prince alone. The palace's great assembly hall was humming with a score of different conversations as Morg made his eloquent entrance, cripple in tow, a few minutes before 2 o'clock. Once passed through the hall's open double doors, he paused, considering the scene before them. Filling the left-hand pews were Dorinan lords and ladies of varying talents and influence, who fondly imagined that a seat on the General Council equated with having some sort of power. He smothered a smile. Ignorance could be such a comfort. Clustered together as usual, in the pew closest to the speaker's chair, were Noel Daltrey, Gord Hafar, and Toby Boker, Geralt's deluded friends. How disappointed they'd be to learn they weren't the kingdom's next Privy Council. Gord saw him and raised a discreet hand in acknowledgement. Noticing, Noel and Toby followed suit. He nodded back, briefly smiling. The hall's right-hand pews were the province of the Ulken guildmeisters and mistresses. According to Geralt's plundered memories, they were normally a noisy crowd, but this afternoon they sat in silence or conversed in low, uneasy voices. Their cattle faces were tight with worry, their eyes shadowed, darting uneasy looks across the hall at their Dorinan betters. They were magicless, but not quite stupid. Word of Loutish Asher's arrest had clearly spread, dealing a cruel blow to their pretensions and raising a host of fears. They were right to be afraid. Directly opposite the hall's entrance was the speaker's chair, and behind that the specially reserved seats for the king and his privy council, placed on a raised dais. How bare it looked now, with only one other chair occupied. No Bourne, no Derm, only Holes, who'd arrived earlier and sat now in silence, his bare head bowed in prayer or sleep. Such a reduction of power, a thinning of the ranks, but they'd get no fatter. King Morg would have no privy council, no chorus of fools. His rule would be absolute. No dissenting opinions, no bleating naysayers. Now, and once the wall was fallen. One king, one voice. It was the only sure way to rule. 600 years of absolute mastery had shown him that. Geralt's other dear friend, Payne Sorvald, the current council speaker, caught their arrival and met them halfway across the hall's central floor space.
Your Majesty, Conroyd, welcome.
The cripple nodded.
Lord Sorvald?
Forgive me, sir, but we had not expected you. It was Lord Geralt here who requested this extraordinary...
I know. I desire a brief word with the council, said the cripple, before you attend to other business.
Certainly, Your Majesty. Conroyd, if I might ask for an inkling of the matter you wish to raise, then...
"Once His Majesty has had his say," Morg explained, gently smiling,
"I think you'll find the other business self-explanatory."
Sorvold's pale green eyes narrowed, and his thin lips pursed.
"Indeed? All respect, but as speaker I..."
"Should practice silence," he said.
Flushed, taken aback, Sorvold turned to the cripple.
"Your Majesty, if I might have a brief word in private."
"You may not,"
said Morg, before the cripple could answer.
"Call the council to attention, Payne. We are all busy men."
As Sorvold withdrew, offended, the cripple said, "I'll thank you not to speak for me just yet. I'm still king here, Conroyd." He smiled.
"So jealous of your dwindling moments, little runtling?"
Leaving the cripple to make his way to the speaker's dais, Morg joined Holes. The bowlsman stirred at his arrival and sat up. His face was wan, worn. Doubtless he'd come here direct from overseeing the disposition of dead Derm's body. There was grief in his eyes and in the way his hands clasped each other tightly in his lap. Such a wasteful emotion.
"Conroyd?"
"Ephraim?"
Just below them, Sorvold picked up his little hammer and tapped it on the assembly bell. All around the hall, surreptitious conversations ceased. Those standing assumed their seats, the air of restrained dread, of watchful curiosity, intensified. With silence achieved, Sorvold sounded the assembly bell a further 3 times, nodded to the young woman acting as secretary so she might trigger the recording spell for the minute's meetings, then cleared his throat.
"With the authority vested in me as Speaker of the Assembly, I declare this meeting open. May Baal's mercy attend us, her wisdom guide us, her strength sustain us. All silence, please, as His Majesty now addresses this august body."
"Thank you, Lord Sorvold," said the cripple. His face, too, was wan, thoroughly bleached by the black tunic he continued to wear in honor of those dead fools, his family, and the thankfully abandoned Derm. "My good counselors, I appear before you today with a heavy heart, bearing news I know you will not welcome as I do not welcome it. But I trust in your restraint and acceptance of Baal's will, no matter how hard acceptance may be." Well, he certainly had their attention. Long denied a good piece of theatre, Morg sat back and prepared to enjoy himself. "Firstly," continued the cripple, his hands resting before him on the speaker's lectern, "it is my sad duty to inform you that Master Magician Derm has passed from life and into Baal's mercy. I ask now for a minute's silence in honor of his greatness and a life spent in the service of our kingdom." The minute passed, tedious, slow. "Thank you," said the cripple. "Of his life and dedication, more shall be said in due course. Secondly, I must now tell you that due to irreparable health concerns, I forthwith abdicate our kingdom's throne and withdraw from public life indefinitely. Be it known I have chosen my lawful heir and successor, Lur's new king and weatherworker, and name him Lord Conroyd Geralt." Sensation, cries, lamentations, shock, and a rising furor of voices, both Dorinan and Olkin, crying, "No, no, we do not accept this. You are our king." The cripple let them continue.